Welcome to SCOTUScast, a project of the Federalist Society for Law and Public Policy Studies. Our contributors join us from around the country to bring you expert commentary on U.S. Supreme Court cases as they are argued and decisions are issued. The Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker.
Thank you for joining us for this post-decision episode of SCOTUScast, Subrogation and Supremacy Clause Edition. I'm your host, Bridget Flaherty. On April 18, 2017, the Supreme Court decided Coventry Healthcare of Missouri v. Nevels. Under the Federal Employees Health Benefits Act of 1959, FEBA, the Office of Personnel Management, OPM, may contract with private carriers to provide federal employees health insurance. FEBA expressly provides, however, that the terms of any such contract relating to the nature, provision, or extent of coverage or benefits, including payments with respect to benefits, will supersede and preempt any state or local or law or any regulation issued thereunder relating to health insurance or plans. Here, OPM's contracts with private insurance carriers provide, among other things, for reimbursement and subrogation. When Jody Nevels, a former federal employee insured under a FEBA plan offered by Coventry Healthcare of Missouri, was injured in an automobile accident, Coventry paid Nevels medical expenses. Nevels sued the driver who caused his injuries and obtained a settlement award. Coventry Healthcare, invoking its OPM contract, then asserted a lien of approximately $6,600 against Nevels' settlement proceeds to cover the medical bills Coventry Healthcare had paid for Nevels. He paid off the lien, but then filed a class action suit against Coventry in Missouri State Court, claiming the insurance company had unlawfully obtained reimbursement, and noting that Missouri law does not permit subrogation or reimbursement in this context. The trial court granted judgment for Coventry on the grounds that FEBA allowed Coventry's contract terms to override state law prohibitions. The Missouri Supreme Court, however, reversed, relying on a presumption against preemption that excluded subrogation and reimbursement from FEBA's preemptive scope. By a vote of 8-0, the Supreme Court reversed the judgment of the Missouri Supreme Court and remanded the case. In an opinion delivered by Justice Ginsburg, the Supreme Court held that Missouri's prohibitions on contractual subrogation and reimbursement relate to payments with respect to benefits and are therefore preempted by FEBA. The court further held that FEBA's preemption regime comports with the Constitution's Supremacy Clause because the statute itself, and not the OPM contract, triggers federal preemption. All other justices joined Justice Ginsburg's opinion for the court, except Justice Gorsuch, who took no part in the consideration or decision of the case. Justice Thomas filed a concurring opinion. And now, to discuss the case, we have George Horvath, a postdoctoral fellow and lecturer at Berkeley Law.
Justice Ginsburg's decision for a unanimous court in Coventry Healthcare v. Nevels answered a narrow question of statutory interpretation. Whether the Federal Employees Health Benefits Act, or FEBA, preempts state laws that bar insurers from seeking reimbursement and subrogation after paying their beneficiaries' expenses. The decision in Coventry also involved a long-running question over whether the court will use the presumption against preemption to narrow the construction of express preemption provisions. The presumption, which was articulated in the 1947 Rice v. Santa Fe elevator case, is based on the assumption that the historic police powers of the states are not to be superseded by a federal act unless that was the clear and manifest purpose of Congress. The role of the presumption in interpreting express preemption provisions has been controversial. Most interestingly, the case also raised, but ultimately left unresolved, the significant federalism question. How far may Congress go in delegating the authority to preempt state laws? Before tackling these questions, I will lay out a bit of background and the facts of the case. Under FEBA, the Federal Office of Personnel Management, or OPM, contracts with private health insurance carriers to provide coverage for federal government employees. The government pays 75% of program premiums, with the other 25% paid by the employees. These premiums are deposited into a federal treasury fund, from which carriers draw to pay covered benefits. The FEHB contracts, including the contract in this case between OPM and Coventry Health, have long included provisions that require insurers to seek repayments of benefits they've already made on behalf of their beneficiaries through subrogation or reimbursement. In a subrogation action, a carrier steps into its beneficiary's shoes in a legal action against a third party who negligently injured the beneficiary. The insurer, rather than the beneficiary, demands repayment of the healthcare costs that the insurer has already paid. In reimbursement actions, if an injured beneficiary later obtains payment from the party who caused the injuries, either through a settlement or a court judgment, the insurer demands repayment from the beneficiary. In an amicus brief in this case, the government noted that in 2014 alone, FEHB participating insurers had recovered $126 million through subrogation in reimbursement actions. The government urged that these recoveries had permitted carriers to offer lower premiums and expanded services, and may have led to the program being more solvent. But many states, including Missouri, have barred insurers from seeking to recover payments through subrogation and reimbursement actions. Missouri courts construe voluntary payment by an insurer of its beneficiaries' claims as a waiver to later recovery. Missouri courts also see subrogation actions as violating public policy because they impermissibly intrude upon an insured person's right to a cause of action to recover for suffering a personal injury. Thus, all FEHB contracts negotiated by OPM include provisions that obligate insurers to seek recovery of payments through reimbursement or subrogation actions, while some states bar such actions. The lead plaintiff in Coventry, Jody Nevels, was injured in a car accident. Nevels was insured by Coventry through the FEHB program. Coventry paid Nevels expenses arising from the accident. Later, Nevels sued the other driver, ultimately settling for damages, including payment for his medical bills. Coventry demanded that Nevels reimburse it the $6,000-plus it had paid for Nevels' medical care. Nevels paid Coventry, then filed a class action suit in Missouri State Court, arguing that Coventry had obtained repayment in violation of Missouri law. Coventry's defense was that a provision of FEBA, Section 8902M1, expressly preempted the Missouri anti-subrogation law. This express preemption provision reads in part, "The terms of any contract under this chapter, which relate to payments with respect to benefits, shall supersede and preempt any state law which relates to health insurance or plans." An OPM regulation promulgated through notice and comment rulemaking during this litigation asserts the authority to preempt state laws through the terms of contracts that OPM negotiates with private insurance carriers. As I noted at the outset, this case raises three questions. I'll discuss the statutory interpretation and the presumption against preemption questions first, before turning to the federalism question. The Missouri court had focused on how much deference to afford OPM's regulatory assertion of preemptive authority. The court refused to grant Chevron deference. Rather, it narrowly interpreted the express preemption provision in FEBA to find that the provision did not cover subrogation and reimbursement actions. This holding was based on dicta in the U.S. Supreme Court's 2006 decision in Empire Health Choice v. McVeigh, where Justice Ginsburg had said that insurers' subrogation and reimbursement actions, because they ordinarily arise long after benefits have been paid, may not fall under the express preemption provision. Nevels argued to the U.S. Supreme Court the Missouri court had been correct to apply the presumption against preemption. In an amicus brief, a group of leading constitutional law scholars also urged the court to apply the presumption in this case to protect the federalism values at stake. Now, for a time, a majority of the U.S. Supreme Court did support the use of the presumption in interpreting express preemption provisions in cases such as Cipollone v. Liggett Group and Bates v. Dow AgroSciences. Notably in these cases, Justices Scalia and Thomas strenuously disagreed. But several recent Supreme Court decisions, including Dan's City Used Cars v. Pelkey, CTS v. Waldberger, Gobe v. Liberty Mutual, and Puerto Rico v. Franklin Trust, suggest that in cases involving the interpretation of express preemption provisions, the presumption now has a very limited role. Reading these cases along with Coventry, it seems clear that three of the justices, Chief Justice Roberts and Justices Thomas and Alito, as a rule reject the use of the presumption when construing express preemption provisions. Five others, Justices Kennedy, Ginsburg, Breyer, Sotomayor, and Kagan, have taken a case-by-case approach. But of these, three signed on to Justice Thomas's unequivocal rejection of the use of the presumption in Franklin, California Trust. Justice Gorsuch is yet to have the opportunity to weigh in on this question, but as Judge Gorsuch on the Tenth Circuit, the presumption played no role in his express preemption analysis in Kaplinger v. Medtronic. In fact, rather than narrowing the scope of the express preemption provision, Justice Ginsburg took the opposite approach in Coventry, finding in the statute's phrasing the terms of any contract which relate to benefits a broad preemptive purpose on Congress's part. Justice Ginsburg held that the provision easily covered contractual subrogation and reimbursement clauses. Through either action, a carrier receives, either from the beneficiary or a third party, a payment respecting benefits it had previously paid. Coventry's counsel, Miguel Estrada, had summed it up best during oral argument, saying that it was inconceivable that in a case in which the gravamen of the complaint is that Coventry took Nevels's benefits back, the case could not be related to benefits. So at its narrowest, Coventry is an easy case. Subrogation and reimbursement relate to benefits, and so contract provisions governing these actions fall within the scope of FEBA's express preemption provision. The court's decision allows OPM to create national uniformity in FEHB contracts and may help the program remain solvent. The Coventry decision also suggests that arguments urging narrow interpretations of express preemption provisions based on the presumption against preemption will have little chance of success. As I noted at the outset, the most interesting aspect of the case is the federalism issue it raises. In a brief concurrence, Justice Thomas noted his reservation that a statute giving an executive agency the power to preempt state laws through contracts might unlawfully delegate legislative power to the executive. I think this raises two related but distinct questions. The first is whether such delegations to executive agencies are consistent with the federalism values that structure the federal-state allocation of authority. The second is whether such delegations impermissibly give private entities a role in preempting state law. Undoubtedly, substantive regulations created by federal agencies through notice and comment rulemaking have the force of law and thus have the power to preempt state laws. But as Justice Ginsburg noted in McVeigh, FEBA's express preemption provision makes the contract terms in health insurance plans preemptive, and it is not at all clear the contract terms are the supreme law of the land under the Supremacy Clause. Justice Ginsburg attempted to avoid any Supremacy Clause problems by arguing that it was Congress, through FEBA's express preemption provision, that stripped state law of its force. OPM only determined the scope of preemption through contract terms. But even if one accepts that Congress validly gave OPM the authority to preempt state law, this doesn't fully address the concern that when the federal government preempts state law, process matters. The rulemaking process is visible and politically accountable and results in rules carrying the force of law. But contract terms are not created through the rulemaking process. Allowing agencies to preempt state laws through less accountable means can tilt the federal-state balance in favor of the federal government without any accounting of the state's interests or of the federalism benefits that might be sacrificed. This would seem to be an ideal place for courts to police the federal-state boundary. Going a step further, even if one were to accept that letting agencies determine the scope of preemption through contracts is consistent with federalism values, the role of private insurers is a potential federalism problem. In oral argument, several justices engaged in a prolonged discussion with Coventry's counsel over this issue, seeking to define some outer limit to private entities' roles in preempting state law. The Chief Justice asked whether Congress could delegate the authority to preempt state laws governing professional responsibility to the ABA, and more generally, whether it is ever permissible for Congress to delegate the authority to decide what laws are preempted to a private entity. He later summed up the problem as being whether or not Congress can authorize someone not subject to political constraints to tell state legislators that they can't legislate. Coventry doesn't fully answer these questions. When contractual requirements are simple yes or no matters, the answer from this case is clear. Federal agencies may preempt state law. But in this case, the private parties to the contracts had no real input into the preemption of state law. The rule that FEHB contracts must contain a requirement for insurers to seek reimbursement or subrogation involved no negotiation. A carrier has no input into whether it must seek subrogation or reimbursement. But it's easy to envision other cases that would involve contract terms that need to be negotiated between OPM and private insurers. One could imagine issues dealing with how much capital an insurer must hold in reserve. In such a case, the federalism issue is stark. If the reserve amount that OPM and the carrier agree upon conflicts with the state requirement, the private insurer would play a role in determining that the state law is preempted. Coventry leaves unanswered the question of whether such bilaterally negotiated contract terms would be found to preempt state laws. This also raises the specter of the non-delegation doctrine, which Chief Justice Roberts and Justice Breyer brought up during argument. As of now, though, Justice Thomas is the sole member of the court to have registered his concerns about the court's deference to Congress's delegation of preemptive authority in a written opinion. The justices' questioning at oral argument does, however, suggest that the court may see the need to address the limits of those delegations sometime soon. Since its announcement, the Supreme Court's decision in Coventry Healthcare v. Nevels has attracted little attention. This obscurity, I think, is largely deserved. The unanimous decision was made on the basis of a simple point of statutory interpretation. But the decision, which further erodes the state's abilities to regulate their own health insurance markets, probably deserves more attention from those of us who are concerned with the maintenance of an appropriate balance of power between the states and the federal government.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. SCOTUSCast is a project of the Federalist Society, a not-for-profit educational organization of conservative and libertarian law students, law professors, and lawyers, founded upon the principles that the state exists to preserve freedom, that the separation of governmental powers is central to our Constitution, and that it is emphatically the province and duty of the judiciary to say what the law is, not what it should be. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast series, including SCOTUSCast and Practice Group Podcasts, on iTunes or Google Play. For an archive of past podcasts, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at fedsoc.org/multimedia. That's fedsoc.org/multimedia.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.